David and I went to a church retreat. We'd been attending Mass at Old St. Pat's, a congregation in downtown Chicago, for a few years. Every time the retreat was announced at Mass, we would look at each other and say, "We should go to that," but the timing never seemed right. The retreats were held 3 times a year, and now that we were going through this crisis, we thought it might be a good time to go, despite the fact that we had limited funds to pay for it. We were weary, and we wanted to get to know other people in the church to build a community there. We drove to the retreat center on a Friday night, tired and a little nervous. We followed the signs from the retreat through the winding roads. We had no idea what to expect, and we were skeptical. "What are we going to do, sit around in a fire and sing Kumbaya?" David asked. I was imagining awkward times of sharing. I was mostly hoping I could just walk in the woods, take naps, and meet some nice people. I was weary and wanted to rest. After dropping off our bags, our host led us into a conference room that was lit with candles. There were about 50 people in the room. We sat at a table with 6 other people. Terry, the director of adult spiritual formation at the church, was in charge. He was in his 50s, had a kind face, and described himself as the short, white, chubby guy. He wore a crucifix around his neck and Birkenstock sandals on his feet with white socks. Like the first time David and I had walked into Old St. Pat's a few years before and felt that we had come home, the minute I stepped into the candlelit room, I knew that this was where I belonged that weekend. I sank down into the folding chair, and my body seemed to let go of all the stress I had been feeling for months. As candles burned on the tables and the moonlight shone through the windows, forming blue rectangles on the carpet, we heard stories. Stories of people who had been through difficult times but were able to see God in the midst of them. One story in particular stayed with me. Bob and Jill told of falling in love, of having 2 daughters, and then about how one of their daughters, as a freshman in college, had been sexually assaulted. Later, depressed and unable to shake the horrible experience, she accidentally overdosed on medication and died. As I listened to their story, I also noticed the joy and peace I saw in their faces. How could they be so joyful despite their suffering? This was something I wanted. In the months after their daughter's death, Jill and Bob took ballroom dancing lessons. It was something they'd always wanted to do. The timing seemed a little crazy, but they knew that they had to get out of the house and participate in life somehow, even though they didn't really want to. Their daughter had been a dancer, and they thought this would be a good way to honor her life. So they forced themselves to go to classes every week. But soon, they found themselves practicing their steps in their garage. They explained that it was the only time that they found themselves, if only for a tiny bit, lifted out of their bone-crushing grief. At the end of their talk, Bob walked over to a CD player and turned on some music. And there, in the middle of the conference room filled with tables of retreat participants, they danced. I looked at the joy and peace on their faces and saw that they had somehow, inexplicably, found abundance in the ugliness and pain of life. Now they were dancing, and I was crying. I couldn't imagine how they could experience such pain and still find joy. I had caught glimpses of that joy, but every time I felt I had found this abundance, it had wiggled free from my grasp, like the wet sunfish I used to catch with a cane pole when fishing with Grandpa. I would catch one and free it from the metal hook, feeling the gristle of the fish's lips, and then it would flop in my hands and plop back into the pond. That's what life seemed to be doing to me. I couldn't imagine hanging on to abundance long enough to feel real peace, or to dance in the middle of a room filled with strangers. But I wanted to know what Bob and Jill knew. Why do people suffer? Why were we going through this financial crisis? Was there meaning in it? And would we ever come out the other side, as had these people who were telling their stories? The next morning at the retreat, I woke up early and walked down to the lake to watch the sunrise. It was so quiet. The sun was coming up, but I was freezing. The lake was frozen, and Canadian geese were honking quietly or roosting on the ice with their beaks tucked into their wings to keep warm. I saw a 6-point buck lazily wandering off into the trees. I waited for the sun. The sun's coming seemed to take forever, and I almost gave up and walked back to our dorm room to get warm. But the colors in the sky kept changing, and I was mesmerized. The colors of the sky just before sunrise or sunset are more beautiful than the colors of the actual event. As I waited for the sun and watched the sky changing, I prayed that something good would come out of it.